Welcome to the Exposé Podcast. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Molly.
And we're just a couple of goofy gals here to tell you about topics and get down to the real nitty-gritty of it all.
We are here to help you navigate through the confusing ins and outs of hot topics and get down to the truth.
Oh, yeah. Stay tuned and listen to our next topic.
Thanks for listening to the Exposé.
Hello.
Hey guys. Surprise.
Long time no talk.
Yeah, it has been a while. I'm excited to get back into it myself.
A little bit more of a routine again.
Yeah.
Talking about topics again that are interesting.
It is kind of a lot of work, but it's something that I feel like I've missed. I'm excited to be back. I think you guys can expect some fun topics coming up the rest of the year here. So
I would agree.
So how have you been, Rachel?
Busy, I guess, which is kind of why we took a hiatus. So the listeners know, I guess, like we're in the process of planning our wedding and it's coming up really quickly here. So I've been putting a lot of my time and effort and free time into that.
Totally understandable.
How about you?
I mean, I've been busy too. I am back in school full time. I don't feel like I spend that much time on it, but I probably do, I guess.
I think you do.
I really enjoy my classes, so I guess maybe it just doesn't feel like I'm doing too much, but like I'm taking one that's called Plants and People, and it's like all about the different plants that people have used throughout history. And it's been really interesting just how people have used like plants medicinally and stuff throughout history in different cultures. That's going to help me as I put on this witch hat here and make a potion.
Ooh, I like it. Speaking of witches and Halloween, I'm dying to know what your most vibrant or most memorable memory you have of Halloween.
That's a tough one. I have always liked Halloween, like as a child, as an adult. It's one of my favorite times of year. And we've always kind of gone for it. Like when I was a kid, we always would make my costumes. Like my mom would sew my costume or we'd come up with one. I remember one year I was a mad scientist and Frankenstein. So basically I had like fake legs attached like somewhere on my torso and like bent them around so it looked like I was carrying like a piggyback riding on Frankenstein's back, and like the head of the Frankenstein was like somewhere on my stomach. I don't know. It was weird.
Sounds intricate.
I do remember one time when I had a friend that was a foreign exchange student in high school. We decided to go trick-or-treating because she had never been. She was from Taiwan. They just don't really do that there. We were probably like 17 or 18, so a little bit probably too old to be trick-or-treating normally, but luckily I had my little brother, so he was like 5, 6 at the time. So basically we packed all of my friends. I had a Geo Tracker was my car. I don't know if any of our listeners know what that is. It's a very, very small like Jeep looking thing kind of that fit like maybe 3 people, 4 people comfortably. But I think we packed like 9 people into that car, including my little brother, and like drove around in these really ratchet costumes that we found last minute and trick-or-treated. So that was a lot of fun.
That's a good memory.
How about you? Do you have any standout Halloween-y memories?
Not too many. Like my family, we didn't really do much for it. We didn't go all out as some people do. Like my mom maybe put out a pumpkin.
See, my mom has like a bunch of crap in her yard even to this day.
Yeah. Like, I guess it's because like my parents' house is kind of on the edge of town and they like never get trick-or-treaters. So I think my mom was like, what's the point? But when I was a kid, my aunt used to make our costumes and we would only go trick-or-treating at the nursing home where my grandma was at. And I remember being Pocahontas one year.
Oh.
And then as I got older, it just really wasn't a thing. I was in a small town, and like once you hit a certain age, it was like not cool to go out.
Definitely.
And there was like, I don't know, maybe four other kids in my grade that lived in the same town as me. So it was like once one of us was done, we were all done. And then like college obviously was a good time to be in dressing up for Halloween and stuff. Oh, one good memory from Halloween. Jesse and I, when we were in college, we went as an elderly couple. Oh. And that was probably the most fun we have ever had on Halloween. Like, ever. Like, we dressed up, we looked really good, we looked old, and people were staring at us when we went out to the bars, and we had a lot of people want to take pictures with us, and it was,
did you guys, that was, did you like act old too, like,
yes, yeah,
that's funny.
Oh yeah,
I love it.
I had I think I had a pillow stuffed in my pants, so it made me look like I had a big butt. And you know, you hunch over, yeah. And then I put, like, I had a bra on, but I kept it unhooked, and I put socks in it, so like my boobs looked like they were hanging low. And, oh gosh, that was a good Halloween.
Yeah.
That one was fun.
Halloween's a scary time, and we have a lot of these creatures that, I mean, where do they come from? We've just gathered a little bit of a Halloween history primer on these creatures for you tonight. And I am going to let you, Rachel, take it away.
So I decided to look into jack-o'-lanterns because I really had no idea where they even came from or like why we do the things we do with them. Jack-o'-lanterns originated from Ireland, and over there they actually use like large turnips or potatoes as their canvases, just because pumpkins are native to America, so they don't have them. I suppose they probably get shipments now, but at least back then they didn't. The name jack-o'-lantern comes from an Irish folktale about a man named Stingy Jack.
Oh.
So people have been making jack-o'-lanterns for centuries, and it all comes back down to Stingy Jack. Now, Stingy Jack invited the devil to have a drink with him.
Oh, no.
And true to his name, Stingy Jack did not want to pay for his drink, so he convinced the devil to turn himself into a coin that Jack could use to buy their drinks. Once the devil did so, Jack decided to keep the money and put it in his pocket next to a silver cross, which prevented the devil from changing back into his original form.
Oh.
Jack eventually did free the devil under the condition that the devil would not bother Jack for 1 year, and that if Jack should die, the devil would not claim his soul. The next year, Jack again tricked the devil into climbing into a tree to pick a piece of fruit. Side note, how is the devil falling for these?
Yeah, and why is he like hanging out with this guy that has already taken him hostage?
Right. Why did he do such a thing?
Sure, I'll climb into this tree. Okay.
All right. So while the devil was in the tree, Jack then carved the sign of a cross into the tree's bark so that the devil could not come down until the devil promised Jack that he wouldn't bother him for 10 more years.
Ooh.
Soon after, Jack did die. And as the legend goes, God would not allow such an unsavory figure into heaven. The devil, upset by the tricks that Jack had played on him, keeping his word, did not claim his soul to allow Jack into hell. So he sent Jack off into the night with only a burning coal to light his way. Jack put the coal into a carved out turnip and has been roaming the earth ever since.
Oh.
The Irish began to refer to this ghostly figure as Jack of the Lantern and then simply turned into jack-o'-lantern.
Oh, okay. I did not know. I knew they did the turnip thing, but I did not know about Stingy Jack. So that's interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And people in Scotland and Ireland, I guess they believe that if they do light their pumpkins, it keeps Stingy Jack and other wandering evil spirits away from their homes.
Okay. So. I like it. I wonder, I don't know, I'm torn because I feel like, first of all, maybe Stingy Jack was stingy, obviously. So I guess that's a sin. But he also kept the devil like locked away from the world for many years, sounds like. So
at least 11.
Yeah. So that kind of seems like a good thing. Like maybe that would be worthy of getting into the pearly gates, but I guess not.
I'm sure he did some other things in his life that was not godly, like, I suppose.
I suppose after you know that you're not going to hell because you made a deal with the devil, then maybe you just do whatever you want. I don't know.
I also think if you're making a deal with the devil, you're automatically not getting into heaven.
Oh, fine. Speaking of making deals with the devil, my first monster that I picked is witches. A lot of people think that they have like made a deal with the devil and that's what gives them their power. So that's the segue there.
Okay.
I don't know. I do like witches. I don't know why. I just like, they're like, I don't know, using like the herbal things and like, I don't know, something that I've just been interested in witches for a while. So I was excited to do some research.
Yeah.
I was going to start out by reciting this little poem thing, but well, it's from Macbeth, the Scottish play. Like, it's just the famous. They have like the double, double toil and trouble, fire burn and cauldron bubble. I don't know the rest of it, but
cute. Okay.
But in their beginnings, witches really have been found in pretty much any culture as maybe not witches, but as like sorcerers or some type of medicine, witch doctor type situation going on there. Most witches, as we think of them, were basically thought to be pagans who are doing the devil's work. So that's kind of the negative connotation there. But in reality, most witches were, if they were anything at all, just natural healers, like women who had the knowledge of what kinds of plants might heal illnesses and that kind of thing, or just wise women in general, probably actually decent people that were trying to help people. But of course, when people don't understand things like how this plant healed their child, they start to think, well, if they can do good, they can probably also do bad with this stuff. So they were just suspicious of the natural healers and wise women of the world. So the word witch comes from Old English, and I don't know how to say it, but it's spelled W-I-C-C-E, wiki. Witchy. But it also is the root of the word Wicca, which is kind of like the modern day witchcraft phenomenon sweeping the nation. The earliest written record of a witch per se is in 1 Samuel. It's a book of the Bible in the Old Testament, and was written about 600 BC. And it refers to the witch of Endor. So the story goes that King Saul sought the help of a witch of Endor to summon the dead prophet Samuel. And he wanted help from Samuel to beat the Philistine army. And I guess it turned out badly for him. Like, he did in fact succeed in summoning the dead prophet, but then that prophet prophesied his death and the death of his sons.
Ooh.
Not a happy ending for King Saul. The Bible also says in Exodus 20:18, thou shall not suffer a witch to live. And I think that passage is what spurred on the witch hysteria of the Middle Ages. That was all a long time ago, but for some reason in the like 1400s, witches became a big thing. They started over in Europe going on witch hunts and basically torturing people until they confessed. With very little evidence. You didn't need evidence to call somebody a witch. You just needed a poor crop season and someone to blame, essentially. They were very common. Burning at the stake and hanging were common ways to execute witches. And usually it was single women, widows, just kind of those ones on the margins of society that didn't really fit in. And to be honest, just giving my like little feminism feedback, hasn't it always been that way? Women who don't fit society's mold just get, people think they're evil.
Yes.
Up to no good.
Yes.
Yeah. But anyway, so back in 1486, there was a book, and I'm going to try to pronounce this, Malleus Maleficarum.
Ooh.
It was written by two German Dominican religious figures. And it basically detailed how to identify, hunt, and interrogate witches. That kind of spurred the hysteria because it was the best-selling book for 100 years, second only to the Bible. So everybody was wanting this book, wanting to go find some witches, and it did label witchcraft as heresy, which of course made it a crime in the church then. So bad news for anybody that happened to like herbal teas back then. So between 1500 and 1660, at least, probably more than 80,000 people were put to death in Europe for being a witch. That's a lot of people, I think.
Do you think... I feel like just anyone, if I didn't like someone, I could be like, I could go run away and be like, hey, townspeople, that lady's a witch. Just like out of pure spite. Just
absolutely. Basically, they say that's what happened a lot. Like jealous wives, maybe of like a single younger woman or like a maid that was pretty. And if they got attention from their husband, I mean, just yeah, all kinds of stuff. Mm-hmm. I think, yeah. Or maybe you just looked at me funny and I don't like you. Who knows? Yeah. Cause basically their methods I read about, you know, there's the old like classic, you tie them to like boards or something and put them in a pond. And if they sink, they're not a witch, but if they float, they're a witch. Well, if they sink, they're going to drown. So I guess at least you drown innocent. I don't know. And if you float, then you're going to get burned at the stake. Eventually, that hysteria died down. But just as it was dying down in Europe, it began to swell over in the Americas. This leads us to the probably most infamous witch trials that everybody's heard about, the Salem witch trials. Mm-hmm. And those were in 1692. And they really only happened over the course of a year. It was just kind of like that year was the year of the witches in Salem. Mm-hmm. So it started out, two young girls were having like contortion, like their bodies were contorting and stuff. They were sick and it wasn't really known why they were kind of having these weird, like, I would guess probably things like hand cramps and like muscle cramps that were causing them to look contorted. And they ended up blaming some local women as the reason, as witches for this. And it just kind of was a thing where one person would blame this person, and then if you talked to that person, then you were somehow brought into it. And eventually 150 people were accused. Only 18, which is 18 too many, but only 18 of them were put to death, and 6 of them were men, which I thought was interesting. So I guess you could be a male witch as well. Mm-hmm. But most were women. It happened in a few other places in like New England, but Salem was the worst. So that's kind of why we always think of Salem as being the epicenter of like witch trials. And today they are assuming that the girls were actually poisoned by some fungus that probably was on their food or something and gave them some muscle contractions, like I said. So surely they were innocent, but I mean, you've got to blame somebody when that happens, right?
Right.
And that kind of died down. And by the 1700s, it became a crime to falsely accuse someone of being a witch. So that probably saved countless lives.
What do you think people from like the 1600s would think about how we are today? Like, okay, I caved and I have TikTok and I get a lot of things like directed towards witches and stuff, and they call it witch talk.
Ooh.
So it's very, very much like tarot cards and like how to burn certain candles and say certain things to not exactly cast spells, but manifest things. Mm-hmm. So I wonder what people in the 1600s would think of something like that.
They would probably like have a heart attack and be like,
they'd be like, what? Yeah. Just die.
Yeah. Just go back and fall back dead. Yeah. I don't know. Wicca is kind of probably what they're doing, maybe. Mm-hmm. It is an official religion in the US. And I think I saw like there's a few million people who do practice it, which is rapidly growing. It's growing pretty fast. But Wiccans strive to be peaceful and their motto is do no harm. They don't have evil spells or anything. It's more like you said, kind of like burning of sage or like burning of certain things to kind of clear your mind or like manifest certain intentions that should be good intentions and that kind of thing. And they call themselves like kind of connecting with a pre-Christian spirituality. One with the earth. But witchcraft is still punishable by death in Saudi Arabia.
Wow.
So over there, that's punishable by death. And over here, we have shows like Sabrina the Teenage Witch and Charmed. So
yeah,
a little bit of a difference. I just had a couple of like witches' key characteristics and kind of where they came from. So their tall, pointy hat, that's thought to originate from back in the 1200s. They forced Jewish people in Europe to wear a Judenhat, which was kind of like a pointy hat. Jewish people have had a hard rap throughout all of history, I think, because basically they were thought of as lessers, I guess. Like they did not have a good reputation as far, they were discriminated against, I guess you could say. Sure. So yeah. The Judenhat was like a negative thing. Like it wasn't a fashionable thing to have to wear. And then fast forward a few centuries, the Puritans kind of had some backlash against them as well. And they wore like a black hat that wasn't really pointy, but they're thinking they kind of meshed those types of things together to make the pointy witch's hat. And also there's, I guess, in Germany, women called alewives, and they were female brewers essentially. And I guess a lot of people suspected them of things because they were women who were mixing and brewing things. They were often independent and making their own money, and maybe single, maybe, you know, whatever, but they were having their own businesses back then. And so obviously they were suspicious and probably, you know, witches. So that's kind of where the black tall hat comes from. Brooms. I don't know. Do you know, have you heard the news about the brooms and the witches? Mm-mm. Okay. Mm-mm. Well, I'll try to say this in a PG way. So evidently one thing that they always said was that when a witch hunt came by, a witch could hide her wand in a broom. So that was one handy purpose for a broom. But also the witches riding on brooms comes from the fact that they would make like a salve out of nightshade, henbane, mandrake, jimson weed. Those are all like hallucinogenic plants. And they would make like a ointment and put it on the brooms and ride the brooms.
Okay.
And then they would have like a euphoric feeling, kind of like flying, like floating, because that's a common side effect from those types of plants. So that's where riding the broomstick came from. The green skin, we can thank The Wizard of Oz, the 1939 film, for that. Basically, they were just trying to really take advantage of the new Technicolor technology. They made her green because they felt like it looked really good in Technicolor, and it was kind of also otherworldly and crazy looking. But before that, witches weren't really green per se. And then black cats. Supposedly, witches could transform into black cats to escape capture. And then there was one particular story where there was a witch who was being burned at the stake, and suddenly there was a flash of light, and she disappeared, but a black cat was seen running from the pile of like branches and sticks beneath the stake. So she had evidently turned into a black cat and made her escape.
Very interesting.
So what you got up for us next?
Okay, I thought I would talk about vampires.
Ooh, spooky.
Spooky. Okay, so creatures with vampiric characteristics have appeared as far back as ancient Greece, where there were stories of creatures that attacked people in their sleep and drained their bodily fluids. Tales of walking corpses that drank the blood of the living and spread the plague flourished in medieval Europe in the times of disease. Mm-hmm. And people, I mean, I feel like this just goes on and on. Like, it's just pure ignorance. People that are lacking the modern understanding of infectious disease.
Yes.
They came to believe that it's basically like the vampires. What other rational, like, how else do you think that a plague would spread other than a vampire sucking people's blood and then spreading it?
Obviously.
That's the only way. That was their rationalization. Research from the 20th and the 21st centuries have posited that characteristics associated with vampires can be traced back to certain diseases such as porphyria, which makes people sensitive to sunlight, and then tuberculosis, which kind of makes people look like they're wasting away, and then pilaria, a disease that thins the skin, and then rabies, which causes biting and just general sensitivities to like light, and even garlic, which is weird. I didn't know.
Like rabies are sensitive to garlic?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that.
Apparently.
Rabies is a hell of a disease. I read a book. This is an aside. I read a book for a class and the guy in it gets rabies. Like it's about a, I didn't realize that it's like, it's fatal. Like if you miss that window to get the shot or whatever, there ain't no coming back from that. And you will attack people.
And they have to like put shots in your stomach, like 14 shots or something like that. Like it's crazy.
Well, yeah. And if you don't realize, like they were escaping a flood, it's a long story. And he got bit by a dog. And so they were out and like, there was a giant flood, like from a hurricane. So they didn't have access to like the shots right away.
Yeah.
So basically she had to end up shooting him because he kept attacking her.
Yikes.
But anyway, go back to him.
Or he was a vampire.
Yeah. Or
he was a vampire.
Well, he can't drink water. You can't drink water when you have rabies, I guess.
Here.
So maybe that would be something that incorporates like, okay, well, they're not drinking water. They must drink blood because how else are they getting sustenance? I don't know. Maybe that's
crazy. Maybe we should expose rabies.
It's bad.
Anyways, so in some cultures, the dead were buried face down to prevent them from finding their way out of their graves because people were really super scared of this. Oh, and a side note, back then, the doctors or whoever didn't have the common knowledge that people can go into comas or that they're so drunk that their heart rate, like it's not, you can barely feel it. So they just assume that they're dead. So that like they would bury them and then obviously they would come back to life and then people would think they were a vampire for some reason. And then, so I guess what they started to do is if once they presume someone dead, that's when they would stab them in the heart with a stake, which is kind of where that comes from to make sure that they were dead. Basically you're dead now. And it just very much reminds me of in The Office with Dwight, like his aunt dies. And then he's like, we've had a couple run-ins where the dead weren't dead. And so like at their funerals, they shoot them with a shotgun like 12 times. Dracula, probably the most famous vampire of them all. And he was inspired by the cruel acts of a 15th century prince, Vlad III Dracula of Transylvania, also known as the Impaler, and the Countess Elizabeth Bathory, who was believed to have murdered dozens of young women in the 16th and 17th centuries in order to bathe in or possibly drink their blood so it could preserve her own validity. And then I just read more about that, mostly like how TV and movies have further projected the idea of what vampires are. But back then in like the 15th century or even 16th, like vampires didn't have like the fang teeth. They did, however, believe that this, so Twilight surprisingly kind of got it right.
What?
With vampires.
No way.
Not so much like the skin being like diamonds in the sun, but vampires are obviously sensitive to sunlight and like, I guess they will burst if they're in the sunlight. So I guess that's maybe where Stephanie Meyer got it from. But also vampires very much were only feasting on animals. So she got that right.
Oh, really? So they...
And like humans were kind of like a last resort, but animals were the primary.
Oh.
I learned that from TikTok. I didn't even have that written down. That's so dumb.
If I had to pick a monster that I was the most afraid of throughout my life, it would be vampires. Like I used to sleep with my neck like covered with a blanket. I read a vampire book as a child, and I probably shouldn't have. And like I learned that vampires could like levitate up to your window and like ask to come in and like charm you to let them in. So I was like, I'm not looking out the window at night. Like, I don't want any vampires floating up to my window. Side note, I was also convinced that my mom was a witch when I was younger. Do you know the Roald Dahl book, The Witches?
Yeah, I'm familiar with the plot line, but okay. I've never read or seen it.
I read that as a child, too. I probably should not have read these books as a child. And my mom, it was like a fun thing. Like when she was cooking, she'd like pretend she was making a potion. And this all just tied together very well. Because my aunt would also, she was very good at a witch's cackle. So like they would, I don't know, it all tied together to where I was convinced that my mom was a witch. And one day I came up to her and was like, acted like I was giving a hug, but I was actually like feeling behind her ears to see if I could find her mask, because witches wear masks in that book. And she's like, what are you doing? And so of course I told her and she's like, you afraid of me? Like as a witch? I'm like, maybe. So yeah, that was my childhood.
That's funny.
On to the next.
Okay, what do you got?
Werewolves. Oh. So.
I love Teen Wolf. Have you watched
Teen Wolf? I have not watched Teen Wolf.
It's your basic MTV show, but Jesse and I really, really, really liked it. And they talk about all the monsters.
Oh, I got sucked into, and it was such a cheesy show. Like, oh God, I don't know why I watched it. Hemlock Grove.
Okay, I've heard of it. I've never seen it. Yeah,
and I don't know. There's like a guy who can turn into a wolf. But anyway, so werewolves. They are first mentioned in the Epic of Gilgamesh, which happens to be the oldest found piece of Western prose in existence. It dates back to like 2000 BC.
Wow.
Which is like 4,000 years ago. And in that, Gilgamesh, who is like the hero of the piece, he jilted a potential lover because she had turned her previous mate into a wolf. And so I guess that's kind of like the first recorded mention of someone turning into a wolf. And there's a lot of Greek mythology involved in werewolves. There's the legend of Lycaon. He basically angered Zeus, and so Zeus turned him into a wolf and his sons as well. They basically were being punished because for some reason, like Zeus came to visit, but Zeus was disguised and Lycaon had an inkling that this was Zeus, but he wanted to prove it. And for some way reason, his way of doing that was to feed Zeus the entrails of a child. And Zeus got mad about that, so he turned him into a wolf. But eating the entrails of a child seems to be a common way that one can transform into a wolf in the ancient Greek stories. So if you wanted to be a wolf, then I guess cannibalism was the way to go, specifically entrails. There was a tribe, supposedly, of Acadians that turned into wolves for a few days once a year and then turned back. And there was another story about a city where one man each year was chosen from the city to go into the woods and swim across this pond. And then he would become a wolf for 9 years. If he successfully refrained from eating human flesh for 9 years, he would be allowed to come back and live as a human. And I guess if he failed, he stayed a wolf.
Interesting. So, how specific.
They're also part of Nordic culture. The saga of the Volsungs. They have a story where a father and son find some wolf pelts in the woods. And when they wear them, it lets them turn into wolves for 10 days. And they went on a killing rampage. And eventually, the father mortally wounds the son as wolves. Of course, he feels bad about it. And so a raven comes to save the day and gives the father a healing leaf, and the son is saved. So in medieval times, though, things really get going, and it's said that witches could turn people into werewolves. Mm-hmm. As you can imagine from the witch facts, there was witch hunts going on, and kind of right along with that, there was werewolf hunts going as well, because they thought witches were turning people into werewolves. And pretty much any time somebody was found like murdered or mutilated, there was a suspected werewolf in the village. So of course they would bring in a werewolf hunter to track down the wolf and see who it was. In France particularly, I guess they actually did have multiple serial killers that were thought to be werewolves, because these serial killers were like mutilating bodies and killing children and like cannibalizing them. So I think they were actually like, these people were actually doing that, and then, or the people started to believe that they were werewolves, because why else would you do that kind of thing?
Mm-hmm.
And it just kind of turned into where like immoral and ravenous behavior was likened to wolves. So anytime a person was acting animalistic, they must be a werewolf. And there are some, like vampires, there are some diseases that might make people think that someone's a werewolf. For example, schizophrenia. I think there are people who claimed like they could turn into wolves and like even imagine that. There's a, and I don't have it written down, so I don't remember what it's called, but like the condition where you just grow an excessive amount of body hair.
Hypertrichosis.
There you go. Thank you for knowing that. So the, you know, those types, those people may have been suspected as werewolves, just not knowing that it, you know, was just a genetic condition. Mm-hmm. And some scholars believe that werewolves are mostly a European thing because they are basically the most feared predators in Europe. It was pretty common to have a wolf attack in a small village that's in the woods because there's a lot of wolves out there. Mm-hmm. Everybody remembers the scene in Beauty of the Beast where she is, the father gets attacked by werewolves, mm-hmm. and then she has to be saved by the beast. Evidently that was common. Mm-hmm. So they kind of point to where other areas of the world have different kinds of things like this. For example, in Africa, they have were hyenas because hyenas are like the predators, or in India, wear tigers.
Oh.
And then like wear pumas and wear jaguars in Southern America, South Whoa. America. I guess it's common to just kind of blame brutal things happening on whatever the apex predator of your continent happens to be.
I remember reading a story about a woman. She was kind of like an old hag type thing. Well, not a hag. Jeez, that's rude. She's just a single lady and she had sheep. I guess she had gotten pregnant and no one really knew how. The story goes that there was a wolf that would come and try to steal the sheep. So instead of giving the sheep to the wolf, she offered herself and then got pregnant by the wolf. And then she had a baby who had hypertrichosis. And that's why I remember that, because I read it recently. And there were like, yeah, she definitely hooked up with this wolf because her baby is a werewolf. Like, and I was like, that's such a strange, like, out of all the things, like, that's so mean. Her baby's just hairy.
It's like they already have a hard enough life. She's a single mother, and now they have to go call on her baby some type of animal. It is sad that a lot of people like that were not, you know, didn't fit in with the society or had medical things that they couldn't help, were mm-hmm. cast as like some type mm-hmm. of monster, zombie, or I don't know why I said zombie.
Like Quasimodo? But,
yeah.
I mean,
yeah, I was thinking of Quasimodo too, actually, when I said that.
Yeah. Like, poor guy just had a humpback. And
well, and wouldn't that make you bitter throughout your whole life? And like, maybe not saying that you would turn into a monster, but you might kind of shut yourself away from people. Like, why try? Maybe be a little bit, right. you know, snappy at people because they're snappy at you, you know?
I looked into fairies, which it's not all Tinkerbell and fairy godmothers and mm-hmm. what have you. Disney was wrong. Okay, so some say they are like ghosts or spirits of the dead or fallen angels. Not bad enough for hell, but not good enough for heaven. They're kind of in between. There are hundreds of different types of fairies. Some are like grotesque. Some can fly. Some have wings. Some are tricksters. Some are helpful, like all of the things. The oldest fairies on record come from England, and they were described by this historian from the 13th century. His name was Gervas.
Okay.
He's French.
Sounds good.
Gervas of Tilbury. So he traveled from different kingdoms and provinces, and he compiled a collection of hundreds of stories about unexplained marvels of the natural world. He wrote about enchanted places with animals that had human characteristics and spirits that were both good and evil, like fairies. When we think of fairies, like I said, it's probably like all Tinkerbell, Walt Disney movies, whatever. But people are genuinely afraid of fairies. Like, if you actually dive into it and do your research, they're actually quite terrifying. Back in time when the world was much more mysterious place, people feared offending fairies who could cast spells on them and curse them on a whim. In Ireland in particular, such was a fear of upsetting the fairies that instead of referring to them by name, they were usually called the little people or the neighbors. C.S. Lewis, who was the author of Chronicles of Narnia, he knew of a haunted cottage that was feared more for its reported fairies than its ghosts. Fairies create fairy paths, and it was very, very much forbidden to cross a path of a fairy. So some people, when they were building their houses, they would cut corners of it, or they would even have their front door and their back door lined up, and they would leave the doors open at night so the fairies could cross through. Because if you mess with the fairy, there's no coming back. They will wreck you, I guess. So they live in a parallel universe now called Realm of the Fae. Most of us cannot see fairies. So kind of what they think now is, since we're more industrial, I guess, you know, buildings went up, roads went in, whatever, the fairies got scared and they hid, and now they're in the realm of the fae. They say, like, if you want to see a fairy, you'll see a fairy. Like, they'll show themselves if they want you to see them.
Did you come across, like, fairy rings?
Yeah. So sometimes, yeah, they'll have a ring of mushrooms or some sort of floral arrangement. Mm-hmm. And if you cross into the ring, you're basically allowing yourself to talk to them or open yourself up to them. And I think they're pretty mischievous if they want to be too. I remember listening to a podcast and it was talking about how this woman would go to the fairies and like pray to them or whatever. And they kind of wrecked her life. Mm-hmm. They made her crazy, and her husband caught on, and he was like, no, you're crazy, like, you're not acting yourself. And she was blaming it on the fairies, and he's like, you say fairies one more time, we're done. And I guess he like burned her alive.
Oh Lord.
Because the fairies took over her body. Yikes. Basically, and he thought she was being possessed.
Yeah. In the movie Eurovision with Will Ferrell and
Rachel McAdams.
Yes, I was like, Regina. Yeah. I think she like gives offerings to fairies. She has like a little fairy house. Have you seen that movie?
Yeah, we watched it.
I watched it by myself one night on a whim because I was like, oh, Iceland, I've been there.
Isn't it lame though that I cried at the end?
No, like, I teared up, it's lame.
When she sang?
No.
It was good.
Yeah, it was a lot better than I expected. Let's put it that way. Mm-hmm. For sure.
Yeah.
But me too. But yeah, so I think they gave like offering, or she did, and then in the end he went and the fairies like killed that guy, didn't they?
Yeah. He was saved by the fairies because she gave them offerings. So I suppose if it's like kind of a popular lore in your location, be nice to fairies, I guess.
I have one person on Facebook who is into that kind of stuff, I guess. And they post mm-hmm. like fairy memes. That sounds kind of weird. From that, I've gathered that you never want to tell a fairy your name.
Ooh.
Because then they can like, then it's theirs. Like if you give anything to a fairy, they consider it theirs, including if you give them your name, like by telling them your name. So don't tell a fairy your name if you ever meet one. Well, I'm going to talk about zombies.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. Zombies are, in essence, reanimated corpses. The word zombie and all that comes from Haiti. It's like Haitian folklore and voodoo.
Mm-hmm.
It's a voodoo thing. So basically, in Haitian folklore, an animated corpse is raised by magical means such as witchcraft, and they are revived by a Bokor, that is kind of like the opposite of a voodoo priest. They are kind of like a necromancer, but they have the power and like spells, I guess, to raise the dead, essentially. The dead then remain slaves to them and have no will of its own. I thought it was interesting because I saw that there's two kinds of zombies. You could have like the corporal version that's in the flesh, or you could potentially raise and capture somebody's spirit.
Oh.
And then they could capture that like a vessel and kind of use that as like a spirit strength.
Mm-hmm.
They do believe that eventually all zombies are going to go back to being dead. So it's kind of a temporary thing. These beliefs came over to Haiti and eventually to the southern United States with the slaves. So it did all originate in like Western Africa, but Haiti is kind of like the center now because they still do practice voodoo there. Mm-hmm. They would believe that a voodoo deity called Baron Samedi would gather them and take them to the afterlife eventually. But if they offended him, then they would remain a zombie. Slave drivers would use the fear of being made into a zombie to prevent slaves from committing suicide. I don't know if this is true, but somewhere I found that you can cure a zombie by feeding them salt. I feel like that would have been handy in a few recent zombie movies that have come out.
But yeah.
It's also believed that witches can zombify a person by basically killing and possessing their body. So it's not necessarily always dead people. It could be that you were alive and then they kill you to turn you into a zombie. And I thought it was interesting in South Africa, they believe these trains are like witch trains. So these trains were built across the country and they think that there's a train full of zombies there, that the workers are controlled by a witch. And basically if you get on the train at night, then you'll be zombified or beaten and thrown from the train.
Wow.
I think it's sketchy to know like the true origins of zombies as far as the voodoo thing goes, because there's not a whole lot of like written history from the slaves and that kind of thing. It's more like an oral history.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a guy named Wade Davis. He was an ethnobotanist. He went to Haiti in 1982. He was, I guess, interested in seeing how these people claimed they were making zombies. And so they have a powder that they use to make somebody into a zombie. And the powder is a bunch of different ingredients. It differs from place to place, but the five main ingredients are some type of burned and ground up human remains, a small tree frog, a segmented worm, a toad, and then one or more species of pufferfish. And pufferfish are highly, highly toxic. They're actually illegal to eat. Like, you cannot serve pufferfish in the United States because parts of them are so toxic that one like wrong cut, I guess, could release the toxins and spoil the whole thing, and then somebody will die from eating it. It is a delicacy in Japan, I guess, so they do eat it there. But it's believed that this pufferfish toxin basically can make people go into a zombie state, because some of the side effects are like a really suppressed heart rate. So like a heart rate that's almost indetectable, like stiffness and like, I don't know, just things that you would think of as a zombie.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you wanted to make a zombie to get back at somebody, you would feed them this zombie powder. They would effectively look like they have died because their vital signs are pretty much gone.
Mm-hmm.
And then they would probably be buried. And then you would go get them a few days later out of their grave and feed them some Jimson weed or something like that. It's like a hallucinogenic plant that they actually, the witches were using on their brooms. same plant. And that would kind of like revive them, but also keep them in like a stupor since they're already out of it from being poisoned and probably oxygen deprived from being buried. They're basically like a catatonic vegetable state. This is how you make a zombie.
Wow.
So
that sounds like more work than it's worth.
Well, supposedly you can like use them as a slave then, and then they will do whatever you tell them. And it's kind of interesting because in Haiti, on the government level, they've actually made it illegal to make zombies. So it's like, it is something that they truly believe in. Zombies started gaining popularity like in the United States as like the undead in the 1900s. There is a few movies and stuff that kind of had the voodoo aspect of it back in the 30s and 40s, but it was not until the 60s with George Romero's Night of the Living Dead that really solidified what a modern zombie was. I have never seen that movie. I have seen like short clips of it, and basically it is a couple is out in a secluded cabin in the woods and zombies happen. But they're the slow, corpsey zombies. Mm-hmm. Kind of in The Walking Dead, aren't they? They're slow zombies, I think.
I don't know. That show gave me nightmares. I think I made it through a season and it was messing up my dreams too much. Mm-hmm. I had to stop.
Zombies started out as slow, but as media tends to do, you have to one-up it as you make new zombie movies. So eventually we have fast zombies. Mm-hmm. And those came about in the 1990s, first seen in Japanese video games, and then were kind of more popularized by like Resident Evil, the 28 Days Later movies, and that kind of thing. And that's kind of where they also strayed from like them being brought back by some type of magical witchcraft thing to more like a virus or some type of thing like that that's creating these mindless husks of people. So I think zombies have morphed from like somebody being brought back with witchcraft to kind of anything that is a mindless horde.
Do you know what zombie movie really freaks me out?
What?
I Am Legend with Will Smith.
I was gonna mention that because
that end scene,
yeah,
haunts me. With that one zombie like ramming his body into like the safe wall. And yeah. Will Smith has like the medicine on the other and he like has it. Mm-hmm. And he like they found a cure and then these zombies, like they're all gonna die.
Ooh. Mm-mm. And that book was actually, I guess, an influence, like the book, not the movie, mm-hmm. obviously, on The Night of the Living Dead. So that was kind of a big shaping of the modern zombie lore as well. But originally it was considered a vampire novel, not a zombie novel.
Oh.
So I guess with time, people kind of reconsidered what a zombie was and then started calling them zombies. But
do you have a favorite zombie movie, TV show?
I really enjoyed the 28 Days Later original movie. I also like Warm Bodies. I read that book.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I liked that movie.
I liked that movie too. It was a little underrated, I think. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I liked the show iZombie.
Oh, yeah.
I think the storyline kind of got repetitive after a while, so I kind of tapered off on it, but it's a pretty good show.
Rachel, what is your favorite? Like, what is your favorite monster?
Okay, if I could be one, I think a witch would be really cool, or like a sorceress of some kind. The scariest, I think, would probably be a zombie.
Really?
Maybe. I don't know. It's hard to say.
I mean, like, a fast horde, like a horde of fast zombies, even a horde of slow zombies, like to where you don't have anywhere to go, I think that would be terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
And it'd be a painful death.
Right. Like with a vampire, you could at least be like charmed a little bit.
Yeah. And or maybe even turned into one and just.
Right. And I feel like they would want to keep you around to keep sucking your blood. So. Mm-hmm. I mean, it'd be a toxic relationship.
But... yeah, unhealthy. Yeah, I'm the same. If I was going to be one, it'd be a witch, I guess.
Ooh, or a mage. That'd be cool, too.
Mages are basically, like, socially accepted witches, I think.
Yeah. Okay, I think you're right.
Yeah. Well, listeners, what are you scared of the most? I think that maybe we should tell some, like, scary stories in one of these episodes before Halloween.
Ooh, yeah.
Well, shall we wrap it up? I think that's a good feeling in the spooky mood Halloween type of discussion for you guys. So
yeah.
We'll see you next time.
All right. Bye.
Bye.